Up next at 11 is Pacific Underground.
KBOO's programming charter. KBOO should be a model of programming, filling needs that other media do not, providing programming to unserved or underserved groups. KBOO shall provide access and training to those communities. KBOO news and public affairs programming shall place an emphasis on providing a forum for unpopular, controversial, or neglected perspectives on important local, national, and international issues, reflecting KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. KBOO's arts, cultural, and musical programming shall cover a wide spectrum of expression from traditional to experimental, and reflect the diverse cultures we serve. KBOO shall strive for spontaneity and programming excellence, both in content and technique.
Hey guys, this is Matt, and you are listening to Pacific Underground at KBOO FM Portland. For today's show, we decided to attend an AAPI art panel hosted by HAPI, the Hapa Asian and Pacific Islanders of Portland, which is a City of Portland affinity group. Some of Portland's most renowned AAPI artists, Dime Roberts, Emma Rust, Jeff Lee, Alex Chu, and Subhashini Ganesan, talked about their work, motivations, and their experiences trying to find a space in the art world while still maintaining their cultural identities. Yeah, well, let's take a listen.
Hi, I'm Jeff Lee, and I'm a photographer here in Portland. I do commercial photography. I have a little studio over in Northwest Portland off of 18th and Upshur. My dad was also a photographer. He taught photography at Mount Hood Community College, and he was born in Chinatown and grew up down there. And he got involved in photography in the 60s. And I'm just gonna have her go ahead and click on that first folder we talked about and open up the top folder. Just click on the first and enlarge it. So he got into fine art photography. He took these summer workshops with Minor White. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Minor White. He was actually from Portland or lived in Portland. He was sort of in that same vein as Ansel Adams, Edward Weston. And go ahead and click to the next slide. And Minor White's photography really influenced my dad. Go ahead and just kind of stroll through it. And I just wanted to quickly show you these because Dad took these workshops, and they're more meditative photos, and they're supposed to draw you in, and the photos are supposed to be interpretive. And then he also, like this one, let's go ahead and stop there. This is a typical kind of Minor White abstraction, semi-abstraction, fine art photography. Black and white, and Dad was a really good black and white technician in the dark room. And go ahead and keep going. And then this is kind of interesting, double exposure image, and just go ahead and keep flipping through these because I know we got to get to everybody. And then different techniques here that he did. And so as she's flipping through these, he taught photography at Mount Hood Community College, and ironically, growing up, I really wasn't interested in photography until after college. I took some photography classes after college and just got inspired. And then Dad helped me learn how to print black and white. He gave me cameras and Nikons and lenses. And so I decided, this is after college, that I wanted to have a career in photography. And and there's my dad there, probably in the 50s. And so I pursued commercial photography. Is that the end of the folder?
It is.
Okay, go ahead and click on the second folder. And then just click on the first image and enlarge it. So I do commercial photography. For me, it's a mixture of people and product in studio on location. Go ahead and click to the next one here. And so it could be a still life, and I do a lot of medical stuff, and you know, and this is kind of what pays the bills. I have a studio, a lot of business portraits. So I kind of call myself a generalist. I usually work with real people, doctors, lawyers, and engineers, and do portraits on location, or in studio, or medical things like that to kind of show the services, and a certain amount of interior photography. So this is kind of the commercial thing. I wanted to kind of quickly show you a little bit of what I do. And then most recently, there's a new museum, the Portland Chinatown Museum in Old Town. And hang on, before we get into that, I just want to finish. And so they asked me to do an exhibit of my black and white landscape photography, which I've always done on the side, but never really pursued a fine art kind of career. I was always busy with, you know, the commercial business, the family, and that sort of thing. But this is something I've always done. So currently, if you don't know about us, put a little pitch for the Portland Chinatown Museum. They have this wonderful, beautiful, permanent exhibit down there that was 2.5 years ago at the Oregon Historical Society. And it's just this awesome exhibit down there. And that's a permanent thing they have in, there. And in the front, they have a gallery area with rotating exhibits. And so my dad and I are currently showing our photography there in the rotating exhibit for the next month and a half. So yeah, let's go back to the top of that folder. Was that the first image? Okay, so I've got about, I don't know, 12 or 15 photos, and this is what's down there at the Portland Chinatown Museum. So I've always gone out and done black landscape photography. Most of these are digital. So we've got Half Dome here at moonlight, and it's a time exposure. You kind of see the movement in the foreground. It kind of looks like daylight, but it's actually moonlight. So let's go to the next photo. Here we're in China, and just as a little backstory, this exhibit at the Portland Chinatown Museum, I edited and picked photos that I thought would be interesting, but also I wanted to take people places, you know, to perhaps places you haven't been to, but just to see an area, to take you somewhere with these photos. I also have done a lot of pictures like my dad did of rocks and trees and things like that. But for this exhibit, I want it to be sort of the bigger picture and to take people somewhere. So that's where we're looking at that, as opposed to some of the pictures you saw that my dad took. So anyway, this is in Hunan province, China. My wife is a Chang, is her last name, and this is the Chang village. And right behind me, if you were looking behind me, would be this village. And as we see here, the dormant rice fields and the beautiful mountainside. So that's what this picture is in probably about 2-3 hours outside of Changsha in Hunan province. Let's go to Paul. Okay. And so here we are. They're at China's first national park, Zhangzaijie. Is these interesting sandstone rock formations. This park was the inspiration for the movie Avatar. So it's just very beautiful there. And it's not in order, I have another one. Sorry, I didn't put these in order, so I'll just, yeah. Okay, so this is another photo from Zhangzaijie. And just very beautiful. It's also in the Hunan province in China. So this is one of my favorite areas. Earlier you saw a photo of Yosemite. This is Mono Lake on the Eastern Sierra Mountainside. So it has these very interesting limestone formations. I have another picture of this. I'm not sure if it's in order, so go ahead. And here it is. So Mono Lake is just sort of this very eerie formations in this high desert area. And then this is another, we've been to Yosemite many times. This is a dust shot of El Capitan. I'm sure you guys have seen pictures of that. And we have the stars, but it's hard to see in this, but you see little white dots on the rock. Those are the routes, and those are people camping out as they're climbing El Capitan. So those are different routes you see, and typically it takes people 5 to 6 days to climb El Capitan. So they're suspended and camped out there. And Oregon Coast, Haystack Rock, just got really lucky with the clouds, and a long lens from Ecola State Park. Turned out really nice. So go ahead. And just the Oregon Coast stream, and just sort of did a post-processing effect here, just to give it that look. But just a simple, typical Oregon Coast stream. Muir Woods in Northern California, north of San Francisco. Beautiful redwood forest. Just really spectacular forest there. And we go to the beach a lot. We're fortunate enough to have a little house in Gearheart. And this is just the seaside Gearheart estuary. There's sort of this two rivers run in between Seaside and Gearheart, and it just has a nice feel. So, you know, with the photography, we're just trying to create some drama and interest with the tones. And this is a pretty recent trip to Vietnam, Ninh Binh area, a couple hours outside of Hanoi. Again, these very interesting limestone formations there. Just a really, Vietnam is really beautiful. Go to Vietnam. And this is Taroko Gorge in Taiwan. Just the Taroko Gorge is a national park there on the east side of Taiwan. So I forget what they call this, this certain cave, but anyways, Taroko Gorge, beautiful. And then Cambodia, Angkor Wat, Thao Prang Temple. They have these temples there that are overgrown with these roots and trees, and it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Huge, huge site with many, many temples. And again, another shot from Thao Prang. Just very interesting in the trees. Columbia River Gorge, just right by Rooster Rock. So, that's it. Okay. So that's it. And that's what's down there at the Portland Chinatown Museum. If you get a chance, check it out. And let me pass the mic over.
Yeah. Chattanooga is really cool. First of all, thank you all for having me here. I'm really excited to get to know everyone's work. This is really exciting. My name is Emma Rust. I am a mixed-race, Korean, white, first-generation human that's also non-binary, that's also queer, lots of fun identities to constantly explore through art. And I am a really new Portland artist. I actually only just graduated from college a couple of years ago and jumped pretty much straight into social work right after I got out of school. And I was realizing very quickly that like I needed to be actively cultivating a creative practice. I was a double major in psychology and art in school, so I had like a very regimented practice. So I spent about a year floating around, kind of like continuing to draw, but a little lost on what my direction was. And very recently, over the past year, I enrolled in the IPRC, so the Independent Publishing Resource Center's comic certificate program. So I was like, I love to draw, I love storytelling, I gravitate so much towards like creating stories out of my own narratives to begin with. This just seems like a really compatible fit. And yeah, over the past year, my artistic practice has grown so much. So I'm really excited to show you some of the work from like maybe college, baby Emma, who is like very institutional, like this is how you make art, to a person who's like storytelling exists in so many different capacities, and maybe talk about future directions I'm very excited to explore. Thank you, Jeanette. You are so on it. Let's see. Actually, do you want to start at the bottom, maybe? I have not revisited this Tumblr in a minute. It might take a minute. There should be more stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. Actually, yes, this is a good place to start. I haven't seen these projects in a long time. So I originally started when I was in school exploring the ideas of like your body as a vessel that experiences trauma, whether that's like intergenerational trauma, racism, interpersonal trauma. I was really interested in this idea of like my body carries such a variety of like experiences, and we are like coded to walk around the world as if this trauma doesn't exist in our bodies. So my original like introduction into my artistic voice and my like storytelling was physically using my body as a means to tell the stories of traumas it's experienced. So I kind of stole from David Hammons a little bit. I'll admit that, like I totally stole from David Hammons. He's an amazing African-American artist that also uses body printing to talk about black violence. If you are ever interested in seeing his work, please write him. He's amazing. So I kind of use that as like my original mechanism for storytelling. Let's see, if you want to scroll up, I also was like a printmaking major, so that's also why like my body and printing kind of went together. So just kind of exploring mark making. It's funny because printmaking for me it feels like very Western. Like I imagine like lots of like cross hatching, newspapers, that kind of stuff. And this project was a really awesome introduction into being like, okay, so what does it look like to incorporate mark making that doesn't feel like as Western? This was also a really pivotal time where I started exploring with India ink and like Sumi ink, which is like the ink that appears a lot in like traditional like Chinese work, Korean work, Eastern Asian artwork in general. So that was when I was like, okay, there's something about this mark making here that really resonates with me. I feel like this is like a part of like my ancestral like understanding of art. So this is kind of when I started to break away from the art making that I was told I needed to create. And started to like tease out those barriers or those boundaries a little bit. Ah, that was such a fun project. Sorry, I'm really unprofessional. Hopefully it's accessible to y'all. Yeah, so that piece over there also was like another moment where I was like integrating like my body as like a printmaking device, and then using like very like reminiscently of kind of like traditional Eastern Asian paintings, like small gestures with like black India ink to fill in enough points that your brain does a lot of like the image making and the completion of the image that's in front of you. So this was like another really awesome moment where I got to really experiment with like pulling in my very like contemporary voice and my contemporary like story that I wanted to tell with some aesthetics that definitely like pulled back to something that I was really excited to explore. Yeah, you can just like sit out of that. More stuff, not as exciting. I promise I can be professional, I'm just choosing not to. Oh yeah, so this is part of the process. So just like physically printing myself, which is very messy and very visceral. Yeah, I care so much about skincare. I don't know if I could do that again. but yeah, so this is how this project turned out. I think also something that came up for me was like, as I was talking about trauma, I started to think about my mother. So my mother is Korean. She lived in Hong Kong for like most of her life until she met my dad in London. She also has a lot of experiences with like interpersonal trauma, intergenerational trauma. Her parents were refugees from Northern Korea. So this was a pivotal moment where I was expressing trauma in my body, and then I was experiencing like what trauma I inherited from her. And what trauma, this piece was a lot about like silencing oneself, like again, being a vessel that's like actively silencing the pain that you're experiencing. So through a series of like really subconscious, slightly intentional decisions, I started, like, the mark making and started feeling this relationship to my mom kind of radiate through my body, and then decided, I'm going to put this on a black background, and what if it was cloth, and what if I, like, attached it to a dowel, and what if I hung it up? And then it became, like, this almost like a really wonderful artifact that embodied not just, like, my own history, but it was almost a tribute to, like, this trauma that I've connected with my mother around. So this was a really pivotal and important piece for me. Let's see, we can skip around. It's a lot of the same. I mean, if you want to see this work, you can absolutely look on my Tumblr. I will give that website name out at the end of this talk. But yeah, some of the stuff kind of reiterates the same imagery. Yeah, this last series, you can scroll up. Yes, all my graphic novel stuff is up here. So Jenna, if you just want to click on the middle series, I think that this captures, so this was my senior thesis. This was like a series of portraits.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks so great. I'm so proud of myself. I installed that myself.
Wow.
I constructed all the frames myself. It's impressive. So yeah, this is just like a culmination of this kind of like mark making, body printing, really honing in on like this like rawness of emotion. I was very interested in capturing just like a like really raw psychological state, and bringing forward like that state, meeting the, like the body on the same exact plane. So that was, yeah, just like a really incredible like life-changing project for me to work on. Yeah, as you can tell, a lot of these projects are very focused on me as an individual and like my own story. And I think the biggest pivot for me when I started making comics is thinking less about like my own experience with trauma, my own experience with pain, but more like, how do I actually connect to community? What is my relationship to a broader community and myself? So I think actually, while I really miss like the rawness of this work, I'm really excited by this new chapter that I've started exploring with like engaging in screen printing and comic making. So that will be the next transition. Scrolling up. Tumblr's so funny. We can skip this one. We can move up. Yeah. So, yeah. Some cool stuff. So most of the stuff that comes post this comic, which is about me and my ex, because everyone needs to process through art every once in a while, all of this has come from my engagement in the comic certificate program at the IPRC. So pretty much the way that class was laid out was they asked us to do like weekly comic assignments, and every once in a while they'd be like, all right, work on this three-page comic with this theme in mind. So if you want to click on Sunday afternoon, yeah, this was one of the comics, actually this was one of the comics I made right before the class, and this was kind of one of those moments where I was like, what does it look like to tell stories that are about me, but also like are something that other people can see themselves in, can kind of like empathize with. And this is also when I started really rebuilding a relationship to my mother. So we engaged in this very important dialogue about like intergenerational harm that was like really, really powerful. And this was definitely a turning moment for me to be like, there are so many stories to tell that aren't my own that I can explore through my own voice and my own narrative, but it's like linking to something broader. Yeah. And I can read these out loud or something if that's more accessible to folks. Maybe I'll read the next one out loud because it's kind of funny. There's some printmaking stuff in between. I love that Fascist Be Damned poster, by the way. If anyone ever wants one of those, I have extra. Jeanette, if you want to click on the, rite of passage. So this is one of the stories that came out of my comic class. So again, a moment to be like, okay, so if this is something that happens in my everyday life, and how can I share this with other folks so that they feel some sort of connection to a broader conversation about, like, queerness. I'm also very interested in, like, contemporariness. Like, what is it to be, like, a contemporary Asian American queer non-binary person? So I kind of tease that out of, like, we're going to talk about Tinder, and we're going to talk about, like, Marie Kondo, and also we're going to talk about our ancestors. We're going to eat some, like, bow together and talk about our family's trauma. So this is kind of a moment where I was like, I'm going to lean into this contemporariness, but also bring out like this like very large like conversation about like coming out and how challenging that is. So I can read this out loud. I don't want to take up too much of your time. But yeah, maybe I'll read out loud, Amy, and we can just pass through this one. Oh yeah, I think it's emma-rust.tumblr.com. Yeah, so we can move on to the next one whenever, unless folks want to read over it. I also have the hard copies here, so if after the panel, or like if there's a break at all, like you're absolutely, I can like pass this around and folks can read these comics for yourselves. Yeah, so then I'll just read over Amy. I can read that one out loud. So this was my first and only fiction comic I've ever made. And this was like a really big moment for me to like divorce myself from my own narrative. Again, like thinking about like community, what stories I want to tell that don't have to revolve around me. And I just wanted to like boil down a really complicated relationship between a mom and a daughter, like me and my mom, in four pages in a really small interaction. So telling my own story, but through the lens of two anonymous characters that I think actually makes the story more accessible. And for me, almost more intimate, because I don't know if I could tell the story if it was me and my mom. So it was also a really exciting possibility to explore. So, Amy. Ma, is dinner ready? Just 1 minute. Okay, oxtail soup. My favorite. Mmm. I made it how you like it. Ma, did you see me play with the cat outside? He's so cute. Uh-huh. How am I ever going to? Oh no, there's a page missing. Try skipping to the next page. Is there a page missing? Wait. Go up. Da-da-da-da-da. Oh, is it out of order? No way. Well, that's a bummer. Go to, oh, it's this page. Thank you. Wow, good thing I realized that before Bromantine Symposium. So, slurping the soup. Ayana! Amy! It was an accident. Ah, you're so careless sometimes. I'm sorry. Ah, it's all over your face. Just hold still. Ma, stop! I'm just trying to help you. Why can't you be grateful? Dad wouldn't freak out at me. Well, Dad's not here, is he? He's not coming back, so you're just better off forgetting him. Daughter? Just go outside and play, okay? Hi, Kitty. Do you think it'd be better for me to forget him? Amy, I brought you a jacket. It's cold out. Come in soon, okay? I don't want you to catch colds. Wow. I know. Mom's sad, too. Yeah, so this is the newest direction that I'm traveling in. If you all want a sneak peek at my next comic, the past semester I've been working on a 32-page comic exploring my lunar New Year's experience with my newest cohort of Asian friends. So exciting. It's a really wonderful, intimate experience where we talk about food, we talk about our ancestors, we talk about Tinder. So I have that portfolio here if you all want to see it. It's not online yet because I don't want to spoil it. But yeah, feel free to come find me later after this panel to share with you.
Will it be ready for Paul and James?
It will not be ready for Portland Zine Symposium, but I am having a book reading on September 6th from 7 to 9. And that will be, I'm going to try and see if I can get dumplings there for all the folks that were like, yes, there's Bao here. I'm going to try and see if we can get dumplings. So thank you so much for listening.
Well, that was great. thank you all for being here during lunchtime. I'm just really great. It's great to see everyone. I'm Pima Roberts. I call myself a 1.5 generation biracial Asian American by way of Taiwan and Japan. So I don't know. Jeff, did you grow up in Oregon?
Yes.
Because I love hearing the Oregon accent, so I have that too. I was born in Taiwan, and my dad was in the military. He was from Oklahoma. My mom was Taiwanese. They met, fell in love, had me and my brother, and we lived there for a couple years. Then we were living in Japan on a military, off of a military base. And I recall that, I don't have the PowerPoint because it didn't work, but on the system, but I just recall that as being a very happy time. We were not white, Asian, Japanese. We were all like, I was with a group of all mixtures of races on this military base, and we were just all American. You know, we were known as American. It didn't matter what race we were. And that was just a really cool experience. And then my dad quit the military, and we moved first to Reno, Nevada, and then 6 months, a year later to Boise, Idaho, a year later to Eugene, Oregon, and then another year later, ended up in Junction City, Oregon, a town of 2,000, mostly Scandinavian descendants. You know, everybody had a lane or a street named after them, right? And we were the only interracial family. And my mother and my brother especially experienced a lot of racism there. I remember the first day of school, my mom, nobody knew my brother and I were, they thought we were odd, but they didn't really know exactly what we were, you know? And then I remember my mom came to meet us at the school bus on the side of the road. And I just remember walking down the bus and I heard this chorus of, "They're Chinese," you know, and it was like, all of a sudden, you know, we were different. We were not one of them at all, and, we never were, but my brother then bore the brunt of the, what would be called, bullying, but what would be called, hate crimes now, because he was pretty much beat up throughout his entire high school, grade school, junior high, and high school experience, and he's still wrecked from that, and he's, never recovered from that experience. So it's made me very aware and angry about what it means to be the other in Oregon. Especially in rural Oregon, but even people don't realize even in Portland, it is pretty rural here. And it's different, I have met more and more young people who have moved here, and I work with a lot of young people who have moved here, and from other places, more urban places, and they say that racism here is just different, and it's true, and the way I've learned to respond to it is different. As well, the word cultural ambassador means something different to me than it would be from a California Asian, for instance. for me it's like, let's get together and, I'll mediate and everything, and maybe from somebody from a more urban area is like, hey, I'm going to teach you about my culture, and you're going to listen. So I think there's a big difference, for me that I'm noticing. One of the first experiences that I've had really, talking, because in the past, there were no words such as biracial, multiracial, mixed race. So my first experience of really, discovering who I am, my identity, and just carving that out in a professional sense as an artist was in 1989. I did a piece, a radio piece, called Maymay, the Daughter Song, and I got a grant to go to Taiwan with my mom for a month, and we've been together, and I had this dream that, you know, we always had this really tumultuous relationship. She was a survivor of World War II. She was actually sold to work as a bonded servant when she was 2 and again at 10. So she had huge abandonment issues, huge PTSD issues, and it always affected our family, you know. And so we always had a problem generationally with conflict. And so we went to Taiwan, and I recorded a ton of sound, and we fought almost every single day during that time. And I came out with this really personal, brutal piece called Maymay. And I don't know if you want to find the, if it goes to the film. There's a little film clip, but it probably stops doing it. Oh, there it goes. Okay. It's just about a minute long, but it's an excerpt that I turned into a film from the radio. Can we just play that?
When I was growing up, I used to listen. I used to not listen to my mother's Taiwanese opera records. The noise filled the house. It was an embarrassing sound for me, especially when she sang along. The banging of gongs, the clanging of instruments. It really irritated me. Quang quang. That's what Dad called it. Quang quang. I used to think it was a Taiwanese word for opera, but it means loud noises, disruptions. How the noises. There was always the sound of battles in our house, the clash of cultures between my Taiwanese mother and my Oklahoma country boy father. It was not quiet. Later, my mother and I would clash, or fight.
We talk the Chinese, you don't understand. Talk the Taiwanese, you don't understand.
And I came to understand that the clanging of the opera was not just clanging. It was the sound of battle. A call for warriors to come to the fight.
We can pick that up. So, lay food apart. So that,
that's on the Maymay project. I basically took all the sounds that I gathered, about 20 hours worth, and put it on there with photos. And so that kind of launched my career with NPR and on a national scale, and that piece actually ended up airing in Australia, England, Canada, as well as on all the NPR stations. Like All Things Considered, actually aired it. So then I started this organization. Well, I took over this organization called Media Rights. I don't know if you can get to the Media Rights website. Okay, so I did a lot of documentary work. And until 2003, I was dealing with the fact that I was taking care of my mom, and she passed away after a long illness. And I asked the question, would I still be Asian after my mom died? You know? So I answered that with this series called 8-Hour Asian American History Series, because it had never been created. I went to CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and I said, you know, we've never had an Asian American History Series on public radio ever. So they gave me funding. And I produced this 8-hour series, and go to the Crossing East page, please. I'll try to keep this fast because I know we're running out of time. And it was hosted by George Takei and Margaret Cho. It ran on 230 stations, and it made a big impact because most stations didn't even know, even in New York and Washington, D.C., that there was an Asian Pacific American Heritage Month at the time. And it is May. And so it created some awareness. We did some outreach with it in Seattle, Hawaii, and LA, and San Francisco too. We had some outreach events and created this huge festival here in Portland where we had a lot of artists come and perform from all over Oregon and actually from Seattle as well. So that one, the Peabody as well, Maymay did as well. And then I was doing more kind of individual work. I wrote a book, The Letting Go Trilogies, which was a compilation of a lot of my short pieces that I put together about my growing up in Oregon, growing up, you know, with my mom's story, my dad's story, my brother's story. I just put all the family stories together into this book. And then in 2014, I'm kind of rushing through this, can you scroll down on the media rights page, please? Yes, scroll down. Or up, keep going. Oh yeah, there we go. I started this a company called Theater Diaspora, which is Oregon's first and only Asian American Pacific Islander theater company, as a response to a lot of theater productions, because I'm both a writer, but also a theater and a media artist. I started Theater Diaspora because there was this a lot of productions where people were still doing yellowface. And that term, has anybody heard the term yellowface? And okay, whitewashing? Okay. Where they would either do productions, you know, having white actors look Asian somehow, especially through kabuki, or they would take Asian plays and Asian roles and just cast white actors in them, you know, without makeup, but just, you know, just because. And there was this one play that basically was set in a Tokyo manga bar with Japanese, you know, characters, and they only cast one Asian despite the fact that two others had auditioned that were really good. And so that was like the last straw. So I started this reading series, a stage reading series with discussions about representation and visibility and just opportunities for artists in Portland. It got very popular. I took it on as a project of media rights, my nonprofit. So we could pay people and continue doing these readings. And then in January, we produced what's called the ISM Project. We did a series of POC acting workshops for free, and then we developed this work of monologues, and then we had discussions after that. And it was here on this bridge, and so we were looking at the intersections of race with gender, orientation, and national origin, and we have been touring it. We did a pilot tour around communities around Portland, and we're looking to go further south and raise money to do that. And then we're going to be doing the second prediction this fall, and I don't have the image up yet, but it's The Brothers Paranormal. We're bringing Thai American playwright Prince Gomobilis. It's a play that is based on like the spate of sightings of Thai girl ghosts, a la The Ring, you know, The Grudge. I guess people were seeing like Asian ghosts for a while there. So he wrote this play, and it's fun and it's funny and it is a ghost story, but it's also about a Thai American family and an African American family who've been displaced. The Thai American, obviously from Southeast Asia, and the African American from Katrina. And they come together because these two brothers have started a company as ghost hunters. And the African American family swear they're being haunted by a Thai girl ghost. And so it's an allegory of grief and loss in these two communities, as well as the difficulties cultural communities have for mental health, you know, care. Certainly my mom always called it, you know, a psychiatrist going to the cuckoo doctor, right? And those kind of attitudes still exist. Like, you know, it's very difficult to get help and to even acknowledge a lot of the trauma that people go through, and especially growing up in a place like Oregon. So that's happening this fall around Halloween, October 25th through November 22nd, so I wanted to just get that out there. My book is available on Amazon. It is Amazon Prime Day. whatever that means, I still haven't figured that out. But anyway, thank you. You can see my work at meteorites.org, crossingeast.org, dmayroberts.com, and thetheaterdiaspora.org. I love websites. I got tons of them. So anyway, thank you.
Hi everybody. My name is Subha, Subhashini Ganesan. It's awesome to meet my first Subhashini in Portland. So yay! How How's everybody doing?
Good.
Great. So I came joyously unprepared, I'm not really sure which part of my story to share, so I'll just give you a little snippets of what I think my various identities are. I was born and raised in Singapore. I don't know if you know where it is. It's south of Malaysia. And Singapore is a multiracial country, and Indians are about 7% of the population. And so I've realized over the years that I've never lived in a country where I am majority. And I think that's really shaped how I think, how I act, and the way that I look at life. So Singapore was great for me, and for college I moved to Rochester. So I went from tropical Singapore to Rochester, New York. Very excited about snow, but by the fourth year I'm like, I'm getting out of here. So I came down to DC and lived and worked. So the Indian girl went to Rochester to get a genetics degree and got a bio and religion degree. So came down to DC and worked in public policy, and then moved to Portland in 2001 because it was affordable then. I could actually have my own apartment on Northwest 23rd and Everett.
Wow.
Those are the times, right? And worked for Equal Exchange, which is a fair trade coffee company, and then tried my best to move further west, lived in Hawaii for a while, but came back. I'm way too ambitious to work to live in Hawaii. I needed to be a surfer and I couldn't, so I came back to Portland, and here I am. So I've given you this whole story, and I realized when I tell my story, people say, so where is your art in all of this, right? So when I was 4.5 years old, my mom took me to a classical South Indian dance class. It's called, the dance form is called Bharatanatyam. It's a South Indian dance form that comes from the state of Tamil Nadu. 2,000-year-old dance form, ancient in origins, but has evolved over the years. It has what would be very... the characteristics of the form, hand gestures, storytelling, and very rhythmic. Our feet are percussive as well as percussion instruments that are involved in the dance. And a lot of attention to facial emotive gestures. So gestures not just with your hands, but with your faces. So my training started when I was 4.5 years old. And in the world that I come from, you don't go to college for art. Art is just part of your life. So I was rehearsing 3 to 8 hours a week by the time I was 10 years old, and that's my life. And that's so when I think of dance and when I think of choreography, it's like oxygen for me. I can't, it's inseparable, right? And I took a little break from doing Indian dance when I moved to the States, just to see what it would be like to understand my identity in a different way. And after a few years, I went back to it because, again, oxygen. I need it as much to express myself as much as I have words. And I started my dance school in 2008 in Portland, and I thought I'd just teach dance, make work, and part of my journey, because I've been doing this dance form at this point for 44 years, I realized that I need to express the art form in different ways for the communities I'm meeting. So being able to mine the emotive abilities of this art form to speak about universal stories rather than just telling stories about the past or the gods or the kings and historic things, right? So that's been my journey for a while now, and here we have this art that's just been taking care of me. I was given an opportunity in 2012 to run a performance space, which I still do. It's on Southeast 8th and Belmont, and I created a nonprofit called New Expressive Works. And the mission, again, comes from, I think, my way of being in the world, which is being multicultural, being multi-generational, and how do we build this sense of community without, for the lack of a better term, without forcing it on each other. So two studios, there's taiko happening in one studio, there is classical Indian dance happening in another studio, and there's a lobby. So what happens in the lobby? How do people connect? How do we collaborate? And what happens if every Monday these people are seeing each other? What does that do to us for understanding, for getting to know each other as humans through this art forms, right? And it's been fabulous to see how things have organically grown. We have about 15 different classes that happen every week, anywhere from capoeira to modern dance to tango, Argentine tango. I'm also an Argentine tango addict. Portland is an amazing place to dance tango, just so you know. Anyway, back to the story. And then I built a residency program for choreographers where four artists get 6 hours of free rehearsal time and space to build and make new work, and we present it at the end of their 6 month tenure as a weekend performance. What started as an experiment is now in its 12th cycle. So 48 choreographers, and I would say about 150 collaborators, right? So you have musicians who bring music in, costume designers, set designers, the tech folks. Really, that has also built its own version of community, because there is a multidimensionality to the type of choreographers who are in it. It's not just one type of Western art form. And it's just been lovely to see how relationships are built across these different ways of expressing art, right? And I'm super honored that in the last 2 years, so in 2017, I was designated as City of Portland's second Creative Laureate. And it is a fabulous platform. It's really a fabulous platform to think about what creativity and the arts is in our city and in our region. How do we relate? What can I do to build relationships for those who might not have visibility, right? Who might not have opportunities? And then build those bridges and see what happens when those bridges get built, instead of just constantly talking about best practices or this is how things should be done. Why don't we just build a bridge and watch people walk from one side to the other until something organic and hopefully positive happens. So that's my journey. I'm looking forward to your questions.
Hello, my name is Alex Chu. I also wasn't very well prepared for this as much. I do have some images that I want to show you guys. I don't think I need to be in the front. They're kind of out of order, so I'll just speak and then show some of my artwork. For the past couple of years, my primary art form has been mural painting. It all kind of started when I painted for TriMet. So this is a very public piece. Some of you guys may have seen it before. If you take the 205 or 84 freeway, you can actually see this from the road. But it also includes several panels. I think this is the right direction. On top where the bus stop is. So this was my kind of introduction into mural painting, but also public art. And I took the opportunity to represent different cultural groups and leaders in the community around the East Portland area. So I try to choose people of different cultural backgrounds and who have different roles. So the story kind of revolves around my daughter. She's in every frame, and it also illustrates, that's a completely different mural. Anyways, it illustrates different people in the community and how they help shape my daughter's life. So a lot of this whole journey also coincides with my being a father. At the time, Mazzy was 2.5, it was the focus of my life to really understand what it meant to be a father. Now I'm a father of two, so it's also, it's just evolving as I go. But it opened up a lot of doors for me, so I work with TriNet, and this is a project that I did working with RAC. They have a rotating mural project at OpenSignal, and I had the opportunity to depict my daughter in this as well. It's opened up a lot of doors for me, and I think that what I'm focused on now is trying to understand how I can use murals and public art in order to represent the stories of others and kind of depict this idea of diversity and inclusion. I know that that's sort of like a cheesy catchphrase in a lot of ways, so I've just been trying to be creative about my approach. So a lot of people, they do come to me with this idea that, oh, we want someone to do a mural about diversity because that's important right now. And I think that my ideas about that have evolved a lot. And the idea is to try to figure out how to depict that without having that be the focus. So a lot of what I do is just pay a lot of attention to the community and the people that will be seeing the mural on a regular basis and try to tell their story as well as I can. So this is a mural that I did. I thought it was Gresham, but I'm not sure. It's at Davis Elementary School in East Portland, I think, in the Rockwood neighborhood. And what I did is I had a school assignment where I had the kids draw pictures to inspire the mural. So the prompt that I gave them, it's on the upper left-hand corner. It says, if I were to write a book, I'd write a book about. And then they illustrated. I got hundreds of illustrations from each class, and I chose the ones that I liked, and I did a photo shoot with the students who drew the pictures, and I actually painted them interacting with their own drawings. So their ambitions about, like, penguins and robots and friendship and outer space, I was able to, gymnastics, that type of thing, I was able to incorporate it into the image itself. So I feel like that's been where a lot of my public art ideas have been heading. I've also been working with different cultural organizations. So I was given funding from Apano to create a public mural. And this is at Mojo Crepes. So it's just a community dessert shop. They sell hot dogs and crepes. And I was able to represent some of the members of the community who frequent the place. So it's been a really great experience for me. I get a chance to meet different people and really get involved in their lives. And I feel like to be able to represent them gives them a sense of ownership of the space that they're in and a sense of pride. So it's been a privilege and pleasure to do this kind of work. And that's what I've been up to. I have a lot of projects coming up. I'm gonna be painting Apano's new community space. So they opened up their building, the Orchards building, and I'm doing that, and it's gonna be fully community created. So if you guys do wanna participate, most of my stuff, I haven't updated my website since my kids were born. So most of my stuff is actually on Facebook or Instagram, but hopefully we'll be publicizing when people can participate in creating that. I did these public storytelling sessions where I brought people together to talk about their immigration stories and family stories, and they were able to actually submit their own photographs and tell stories about these photos. That way I had a little bit of background and insight to their stories, and I'm using these photos to create an image on the wall. And that is a process I want to continue with. It's very challenging. I haven't figured out the proper way of doing that,
but we'll see what happens. So that mural is my next project, and then after that, I don't know if I should be talking a lot about it, but I'm going to be painting for the Portland Airport, so I'm really excited. But that's just the process that I've been going through. I don't have a good way of ending, but thank you very much for having us here. This is a mural that I brought from the Manport Mosaic Project. It's a history activism, memory activism group that preserves the stories of survivors of Manport. And this is something that I create. So each session, there's three panels. Each section documents one storytelling session. And I actually painted these portraits on the spot. And eventually I took it home and refined it and made sure that the words were legible. And kind of fix their faces a little bit. But part of what I'm doing also is recording these live storytelling sessions as a way to visualize what's happening and to preserve those moments.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, Hood River and the Gorge at 91.9 FM, Philomath and Corvallis at 104.3 FM, and streaming on the web at KBOO.com. FM.
I hate a song that makes you think that you're not any good. I hate a song that makes you think you're just born to lose, bound to lose, no good to nobody, no good for nothing, because you're either too old or too young or too fat or too thin or too ugly or too this or too that. Songs that run you down or songs that poke fun at you on account of your bad luck or your hard traveling. I am out to fight those kind of songs to my very last breath of air and my last drop of blood. I'm out to sing songs that will prove to you that this is your world and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that will make you take pride in yourself.